creating and rekindling memories. NHR.
You know what? My dad took me these two shows, which are very different. Both I saw at the Theatre Royal. I saw them when I was, I must have been around 10. The first one was HMS Pinafore, so Gilbert and Sullivan. And the second one was West Side Story. So they were my first two professional shows that I saw. And it was HMS Pinafore that my dad reckons was the one that kind of made me go, I want to do that. And then I was part of a church when I was really young. I still am now, different church, but we used to do pantomimes. And so I'd often play a part in the pantomime and stuff like that. So some very early on in my life, theatre was something, or performing was something that I really enjoyed.
Now, I've seen you in quite a few productions now over the years. What would you say is your favourite past roles that you've performed in?
Oh, so I loved, I played Radame in Aida. So Aida, not the opera, there's no way I'd do the opera. But it's a musical by Elton John and Tim Rice.
Yeah.
Actually, a Disney musical. Disney produced it and did that. That was probably my first lead role. So really enjoyed that. There's some shows that I love being in, Made in Dagenham. I was just kind of in the background there, but that's a great show. But I also mix it up. So last year you'd have come and seen us in The Dream. So I played Demetrius in that. And I love panto. So I was brought up on panto. So give me a pantomime dame anyway. I think one of my dream things is to professionally be paid, play a pantomime dame. Love that.
So, I mean, basically everything from Shakespeare to, as you say, panto dames and musicals, the whole lot. So.
Yeah, I'm a singing actor. I was having this conversation with someone a couple of weeks ago. I'm an actor that can sing rather than a singer that does musicals.
Yes.
But I love.
Now, the latest one, playing Fletcher in The House Amongst the Willows. It's a thriller. It's your first thriller, I think, isn't it?
It is. So you talk about my favourite role. I've never tried this before. So never tried a psychological thriller before. And one of the things that... So I joined the RK Players just before they did Shakespeare's The Dream. And when they said they were doing a thriller, I thought, you know what? That sounds exciting for the RK Players because they're, you know, historically they're known for farces. That's what they do. They're trying a number of different things, which is really exciting, hence Shakespeare, hence the thriller and a few other comedies. But having never played someone like Fletcher, I thought, actually, that's going to give me, as an actor, that gives me a real chance to create depth and kind of understand a character more, perhaps so that you do need that in a musical, but actually there's a lot less of time to commit to that because you're worrying about choreography, about singing, that kind of thing. So as an actor, it's a real challenge.
Tell us a little bit about the play, what it's about, and your character, Fletcher.
So I play Fletcher, who is introducing his new fiancée to a couple that were the parents of my wife that killed herself 6 years ago. So a little bit of an awkward situation. So yeah. My wife, Laura, died 6 years ago. I've moved on with life, got a new fiance. I'm introducing her to my ex-wife, my dead wife's family. And so that's the premise of the play. And as the play moves on, you meet a couple of other characters, one particularly sinister character that comes out, and it's just how that all pans out. And then things come out about Fletcher's ex-wife's, I don't know whether you could call her ex-wife, but Fletcher's previous wife's death. Yeah.
It's fascinating. I've seen it on YouTube.
Yeah.
I've not seen it on stage.
Yeah.
And I know when you were sort of mentioning those characters, and we're not going to give names or anything for those characters, but I know exactly the ones you mean.
Yeah.
And yes, it's a play that makes you sit up a little bit, doesn't it? And there's the usual twists, which are great.
Yeah, I hope so. And what we want to do, and I think this is the, the challenge whenever you're acting something like this. You know the story, but you want the audience to feel the emotion.
Yeah.
You want the audience to feel the awkwardness. You want the audience to kind of, in some ways, be on the edge of their seats of like, I don't really know what's happening. Mm. You know, I've been to see a couple of thrillers, and you want that experience at the interval going, you know, people chatting in the bar going, oh, I think this, or I think this. And so hopefully that's what it will draw out. It will make the audience think, like you say, kind of be aware of what's going on. And it's a small cast, so I think there's six of us. So yeah, it's really interesting.
The nice thing about it is that when it's a play that nobody or not many people have seen before, is they won't know the storyline, they'll go fresh to the theatre to see it. Yeah. They don't know what the ending is, and they don't know the sort of the things that are drip fed to the audience as well, which maybe you sort of realise after it's all finished and you look back on it and you think, ah, there was a clue there. There wasn't. And that's what I love about thrillers that I've not seen before, because then you can dissect it afterwards and then go back and think, ah, yes, that fits in with what such and such said there.
Yeah.
So with a character like this, do you approach it in a maybe a different fashion to doing musicals, with, you know, sort of the characterisation of it?
Yeah, I mean, I was laughing because I've directed a few musicals as well, and I often talk to my production team that are a choreographer and musical director, because they seem to get the majority of the time to spend on, and I get very little time as the director to focus on the acting. It's not always the case, but that's what it sometimes feels like within musicals. I think what you spend a lot more time looking at the lib and looking at actually what is it trying to say? What are we trying to tell this? I love story, you know, I studied storytelling at university. I love storytelling. Yeah. So what I'm wanting to do is take the audience on a journey that's my journey and reveal things at certain times.
Yeah.
And so I'm looking at the lib and going, okay, well, now I've read it all and understand it. Where do the audience think about this? Well, when do they see this? When do they see this? So actually, because as a performer, you know the whole story, you know the end, and it's like having a secret. Like, how good are you at keeping a secret? We were chatting around the table, the four of us, last night while eating the dinner, and friends have told us something that, you know, they tell us, they don't want us to tell anyone else. Yes. And it's like, well, how do you keep that secret till the end? I was watching Avengers Endgame the other day. I love Marvel films. And there's loads of stories about Tom Holland, who plays Spider-Man. And there's a scene at the end of it, which is Tony Stark's funeral. And when they acted it, they didn't tell Tom Holland that it was his funeral, because he can't keep secrets. So like, he didn't know till after they'd filmed it that that's what this is. So I think as an actor in a thriller, you're very aware that actually I don't want to give too much away, but I want to give enough away. So what am I showing? And when I have got lines, you know, I talk as a director to actors and performers, don't throw away lines.
Yeah.
And it's probably more important you don't do that in a thriller, because the audience need those hooks to kind of go, oh, he said that. Is that relevant or not? Oh, he said that. But if I'm throwing away lines, they may not catch that.
And it's making sure that those drip feeds, if you like, are done just at the right time, but with not sort of drawing attention to them as well. You know, you've got to give the audience some something for them to actually catch on to, and give the audience a bit of power, but still having the power as an actor as well to control the audience, I suppose.
Yeah, so. And that's what we want to do. And when there's only six of you, you can kind of work collaboratively together. Whereas if it's a big ensemble piece, it's harder to do that.
Yeah.
A director has a harder job because they've got so many people to take people on that journey. Whereas when there's a cast of six of us, we can work together and say, well, let's drop this in here. Let's make sure they see this particular note, or let's see when actually you're holding hands, the audience are noticing that, and it's things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You mentioned lines there, yeah. Of course. I mean, every actor has got lines on. Yeah. Well, say every actor, a lot of the actors, the main actors.
Silent movies. I'm very envious of silent movies.
Oh, yes. You'd have no trouble learning the script for those, wouldn't you? But with lines in, I don't know, say a musical, a character in a musical, and the lines in a straight play, a thriller, something like that. Is there a different way that you look at learning the lines for the two? Because I suppose with musical, it's easier to learn a song. Yeah. And, you know, sort of you've got the rhythm. It's a bit like Shakespeare. You've got the rhythm to help you remember it. But with a thriller, you've not got so much of a rhythm. So what's your secret or your technique to learning lines?
If you ask the rest of the cast, they'll know that I haven't got a secret. but I do joke, having done, you know, I came back to theatre after a time out 7 years ago. And I've realised that the bonus of musicals is there's big songs. So actually, it's easier to learn a song than it is a lot of lyrics. So coming back to the play thing, did Shakespeare last year, and I found that quite rhythmical. That was quite nice.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the words had to either rhyme or there was a rhythm. I think the challenge, and there's a couple of, in House Amongst the Willows, there's a couple of scenes which are split stage. So there's conversations going off on one side and conversations going off on another, and they intersperse, which is challenging. I think just repetition. I think I can do so much on my own. You know, I record versions on my phone, I read my own lines, and then I do a version which is not my lines. And there are a number of different apps people use. But I don't think there's anything better than walking it out and doing it in rehearsal, to the point where two or three of us have kind of said, you know, this Sunday, you know, we're not rehearsing. Have you got a couple of hours? Let's just go through key bits that actually, because I think for me, it's the spacing. Okay, I'm stood over here. This is where I know I'm saying that line.
Yeah.
Or over here, and I know I'm saying that line. I think the other challenge with a lot of plays, one of my first directorial, if that's a word, debuts was Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, four-piece play. And I remember the dress rehearsal because one of the characters did one of his speeches, but he went from act one to act three to act two, back to act one, all in the same, because it was all very similar.
Yeah.
And a lot of these, where there's only six of you, where there's only four of you, a lot of the stuff is going over. So actually you can give a cue line here and you kind of think, hang on, I don't say that till the next act. So I think repetition, building, for me, it's about trusting other people on the stage as well. So cast are amazing, really trust every one of them. And that's really helpful because you know if you are struggling, they've got your back.
And it's them giving you the cues as well as to what you say. So if they miss something out, that... Yeah. Your mind's going to be all over the place. What's happening here? So, with a character like Fletcher, when would you actually get into the sort of the whole feel of Fletcher? Because, and I'm trying not to give anything away about Fletcher, but a lot of people will say it's when they get the costumes on, when they get the wigs and everything. From what I've seen, the costumes are just sort of like everyday wear, so you're not really going to feel any different. When will you actually get under the skin of Fletcher?
So it's just to give context, it's set in a kind of country club-esque. It's not a country club, it's a family home.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of, you know, midsummer kind of vibe, middle class, quite affluent area. For me, I really struggled because I was so focused on learning the lines to start with. And it was only once I'd got hold of the lines that I was right. And there is a journey, like you say, there's a journey right the way through it. And sometimes that's up and down. And sometimes it can be on a high, sometimes it can be on a low. And so what I struggled to do with when I was, I often liken it to eating an apple or an orange. So when you eat an orange, it's like you're learning lines chapter by chapter. You are dissecting it and taking a bit out. I can't get my character until I start looking at the play as an apple as a whole. Because if I just try and work on my character in this, and you know you've seen the play, if I work on it this, then actually the context of the next scene is totally like, how did that happen?
Yeah.
And so for someone like Fletcher, actually seeing the play as a whole and knowing, okay, this is the end point and this is the journey backwards, I can actually understand how he gets to that. So for me, that's but it has been a challenge.
Now then, aside from theatre, you're well known for your Sunday morning show on Erewash Sound and recently your 52-hour radiothon. What was the most challenging thing about doing a radio show that long?
The lack of sleep. I actually had 20-minute power naps every 8 hours, but the first two I couldn't sleep because the adrenaline was kicking in. I think there's a number of things. So I've tried a number of challenges, mainly kind of physical challenges, running, things like that. And the motivation is always the reason that I'm doing it. So the reason I was doing this, and a lot of your listeners will understand about isolation, especially when you've got ill health, it's really hard to get people to come to you to go to people. And so then you feel you're putting on people. And so what we wanted to do is try and just approach that and say it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And actually there are groups out there that you don't have to be okay to connect with. I think I was just saying to you before we started recording, I think one of the hardest things was the most draining thing was interviewing people, but it was also the most enjoyable thing. So we had about 30, 35 community groups, but also had people that lives had been changed from engaging with community groups when they've been isolated. So genuinely listening, because listening's hard work anyway. I think that's why a lot of people find it hard to do. You know, we often ask people, and you know, I remember when I first started doing youth work, I'd say, oh, what's your name? But I'd be thinking of the next question, so I wouldn't hear their name.
Exactly, yeah.
And you'll know by, you know, interviewing lots of people on this show that actually to truly listen is draining, but actually so important. You know, for someone to feel listened to, I think is one of the most valuable things we can offer as human beings. So wanted to do that well, but doing that constantly, I mean, I didn't get many people wanting to interview overnight. Funny that, isn't it?
Strange, yeah.
I should have come to the hospital. There'd have been plenty of people. So I think that was the most challenging of times. I mean, we did it at the Duchess Theatre and on that second overnight slot, so Tuesday midnight till Tuesday morning, I think I hoovered the whole of the Duchess Theatre just to keep awake. You know, we were playing music.
Cleaners would have loved
it. They'd love me, yeah. So just to keep awake. But yeah, it well worth doing. We raised loads of money for some really good charities. But hopefully, and you don't always hear this, you'll be the same on hospital radio. Hopefully, some of the fruit of what we did was actually people going, oh, you know what? I heard about Parkrun, or I heard about the Women's Institute, or I heard about the Talking Newspaper, and I feel that's my first step to becoming less isolated, and that would be the dream for it.
Yeah. Just remind us how much you raised. So for not only the Erewash Sound, but for all the other charities that you raised.
So I think it's about $2,500, something like that. So yeah, really chuffed. We didn't really know like how much we'd raise. You know, we put a target of £1,000 because anything's, you know, again, like in the context here in the hospital, anything's really positive. But yeah, blown away by the sport. And some of the messages that we got were just, you know, really encouraging and stuff. And I'm emotional at the best of the times, never mind without 50 hours of sleep. But yeah, really positive. And I'm always a big believer of highlighting other people. And so the team that put that together, the tech team, I mean, we got the music playing, but we didn't have the audio playing of my voice till 2 minutes to 8 o'clock that morning. And so it was panic stations. We'd done this big, like, we're launching at 8 o'clock live from the Duchess Theatre. And 2 minutes to eight, I was sat outside a car, putting my thumbs up or down to see whether it was working or not. So, yeah.
If you're like me, and I think you are, with radio, it's something that you love doing. Yeah. For me, it's very relaxing to do it. And I can imagine it's the same with yourself. With doing theatre, that I imagine is going to be something a little bit different. It can be quite stressful. It can be quite relieving as well. But do you get nervous before going on stage?
I do get nervous. I'm one of those people that when I'm stood on the edge of the stage about to walk on, I can't remember any of my lines. And so it's learning not to panic in that and just letting your muscle memory kick in as you walk on. I think, and even this one, because I've not done a thriller before, sometimes even rehearsals beforehand, you know, and we need to be totally honest, don't we? Even sometimes before rehearsals, I get a little bit anxious because we're 10 days away and it's like, oh, actually, do I feel comfortable doing this and all those kind of things? So I think I'm very aware, just with doing the radio, doing what I do in the real world, which is lecturing around youth work and community development, but volunteering as well, very aware about mental health and being kind to yourself.
Yeah.
Interesting, like you, I interview a number of different people around local theatres and you have those conversations. And for a lot of people, local doing rehearsals gives them a break from the struggles of life.
Yeah.
And that's really nice to see that can be a place where whatever character you're playing, it's make-believe. You know, that's what it is. And so you can remove yourself from the realities. You know, we're living in a tough world at the minute, but actually to go off and, you know, even play a character like Fletcher is, okay, I need to put whatever's going on at home, whatever's going on in work beside me to focus on this. And that can be really releasing for people as well.
And we were talking before this about youth theatre.
Yeah.
And one great thing about youth theatre is that it takes a person who maybe is a little bit shy, you know, not so confident, and you put them in a theatrical environment and they're taking on another person's personality. And it really brings them out. It builds confidence as well, doesn't it? And it's great for everybody, not just adults, but kids as well, you know, just to be somebody else for a few hours.
Yeah, and I was speaking with a parent because their daughter had auditioned for something in the pantomime that I directed earlier on in the year, and her lib was brilliant. It was really good, but halfway through the singing audition, she just broke down, and we talked about that. Actually, you need to be in character. Because, and I know a couple of people that will thrive on stage, will take leading roles on stage, but won't go and be in a choir. Because in a choir, they have to be themselves.
Yeah.
And so that's really fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
That actually those that are insecure about who they are, about what they look like, can go and deliver a great performance on stage. But actually, because they've got a great voice, doesn't mean they feel confident in being themselves.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, really good.
Let me ask you about superstitions. Do you have any theatrical superstitions before you go on? Or is it just for an older actor? Because you're not an old actor, you see.
I turned 50 last week, Kev, so that's not I'll take old actor.
A lot of sort of the more mature actors, they sometimes have superstitions. Yeah. So you don't have anything?
No, I think for me, because I've got a faith, I try, and so I will always pray before I go on. And some people that don't have a faith would call that a superstition, perhaps. But for me, it's about, okay, just calming myself, just kind of being in a place where, you know, I think whoever you are, being in a place where you're relaxed before you go on is really important.
Yeah.
So whatever that brings, whatever you need in your life to bring you that, it is important. So for me, it's just about taking that time, just having a cheeky prayer, and just kind of then going, okay, I need to be on. But yeah, no superstitions really.
It's whatever gives you confidence.
Yeah, that's right.
At the end of the day,
what helps you be the best you can be?
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big believer in helping people fulfill their potential, and so
Brilliant. Where can people get tickets to come and see The House Amongst the Willows?
So TicketSource is a great place to get your tickets. So just type in Arcade Players into TicketSource. Duchess Players website you can go on to. Arcade Players website, Duchess Theatre website, or there's another coffee morning before at the Duchess Theatre. Before the show, because the show's a week on Wednesday, opening night. So Duchess Theatre have their coffee morning tent as well, so you can get through there as well.
Marvellous stuff. It's The House Amongst the Willows. It's been performed by the Arcade Players, Duchess Theatre in Long Eaton. Loads of parking, so you know, no reason really not to come. Bus, whatever, bike, car, there's plenty of places. 24th to the 27th of April, and you can come see Richard playing the part of Fletcher. And I ain't going to tell you any more about that character because you've got to come and see this play. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thanks for having me, Kev.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Did you know that Nottingham Hospital Radio is a registered charity? As a result, we rely on people like you to donate to it. All our members are committed volunteers who run the service for the benefit and entertainment of the patients in the Queen's Medical Centre and City Hospitals. Research has shown that listening to hospital radio can positively benefit a patient's recovery, and we think it's a very worthwhile thing to do. Donating to NHR is easy and rewarding, so please log on to nhradio.org.uk and go to the donate page. That's nhradio.org.uk/donate. You'll be glad you did, and thank you.